was gonna change my vote from last week.
All right, I think we're ready to call the, ready to call a meeting to order of the TCEQ Tax Relief for Police Control and Property Tax Advisory Committee. Is it on or?
Sound guys, it's fine?
Fine.
Just for the record, it's March 12th, 10:05 a.m. And we're located in Building F, room 2210. Wanted to first start, well, and also we have all 13 members of the committee present today. We've talked about having public, this committee is not subject to the public meetings law or the, but we do want to take some input from the public in a reasonable amount of time, realizing that we need to manage that time to get through our agenda. So I want to, I think it's most productive if we have those comments while those topics, or while we're going through those topics, and save it in for some general comments from anyone that's not, does not want to address something that's on the agenda. So, with that background, I'd be glad to take any input from the committee members if you have concerns about the agenda that's been set. We're really getting a lot of input. Pull it back. Okay. Great. Thanks. Are we okay with going through the agenda? It's okay if you want to rearrange anything or suggest any differences? All right, we'll go forward.
Do we need to, we don't need to approve minutes or any of that stuff that you do?
We do. I was going to do that under the old business at the bottom, but oh. I'm okay with doing that now. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes from the past meeting that was distributed?
I haven't.
I'll admit I haven't looked at it in detail, but I perused it. And thanks for the comments, Cyrus. That reminds me, if any of you see that I've neglected to take a vote or a second or anything, parliamentary procedure that we need, please bring it to my attention. We have a motion related to the minutes.
Teddy Arnold, motion to approve.
Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. We'll approve the minutes as prepared. And thank you to the TCEQ staff for doing that. And while we're on the minutes, we might go ahead and discuss this. I've been told that since we are an independent committee, the TCEQ staff will not prepare the minutes going forward. We're supposed to do our own. Someone has mentioned that this is being recorded, which is a record of the meeting. Do we need minutes, or is a record of the meeting good enough?
The bylaws that you adopted at the last meeting requires you to keep minutes.
Well, not just the bylaws, but there's Chapter 5 of the 30 PAC requires the advisory committee to keep official minutes.
All right. Can I answer that question?
Mr. Chairman? Can we have a little explanation about that whole you're on your own statement? I think we're getting, and maybe see if there's a way to reevaluate that, or what can we do something to change that? Because I think we need staff support, and I think it makes sense for the staff to do that. And is this, what's the basis of that? I've never been on an advisory committee for a state agency that did not, where staff did not prepare the documentation for us, prepare the minutes for us, and staff the committee. I've never been on an agency's advisory committee, including the previous advisory committees of this agency, on this program, where the staff did not staff the committee.
Well, this agenda that is today's meeting, we didn't prepare that agenda. For us to have a distinct role between the agency staff and the advisory committee that is appointed by the commissioners, the the staff feel that in order for that distinct role to be there, that we wouldn't set your agenda, nor would we dictate what you, the minutes that you have.
No, I agree.
Because that's approved by you.
That's right. We approve the minutes, right? And then they're our minutes. But every advisory committee I've been on, and every agency that I've been on advisory committee on, including this agency and this program, the agency has staffed the committee.
Prepared minutes.
They prepare an agenda. It's not they control. The committee controls the agenda. The committee's going to tell them what they want, but they staff it for us.
Maybe we should ask, are you allowed to prepare minutes if we requested it?
The minutes are a historic document. I mean, they are what they are. And it's not that you're going to guide us one way or the other by, well, we can end up approving them one way or the other.
If you want to give us an answer during the old business toward the end, that's fine. Think about it. I'm okay with that.
Who prepared these minutes?
The staff.
They did a fine job.
They did an excellent great job.
They did that because there was not a chairman at the beginning, as I understand.
Right. The reason we did the minutes the first meeting is because we called the first meeting, we set the agenda, and we went through what the committee would, how the committee would be structured. So that's, since we set the agenda and had the agenda, we took the liberty of writing the minutes that occurred from the recording. We just took it that since we wanted a distinct role between the committee and the ED, that it would be best that it would be clear that the committee would set their own agenda, and then dictate what they want to convey back to the public and to the ED of their minutes. Secondly,
said that, we'd be happy to prepare minutes if that's the desire.
Sure. My boss has told me we'd be happy to prepare the minutes if y'all so choose to.
I think that would be great. I think we need some staff support for efficiency purposes and for what we're doing. And frankly, you know, for Bob's time.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and listen to all this again.
I just think that would make sense to do it like we've done before, and I would still feel extremely independent from the agency and not controlled by the agency. And I know that all these written documents come back to us and we vote to approve them. You know, we look at the agenda and set our agendas and decide what we do. We're going to be, I'm not going to feel controlled or unduly influenced by the agency because you're taking care of those activities for us. I would feel very appreciative and feel it will make us a more effective advisory committee to the commission and to the agency. So, however it's best to do that, Mr. Chairman. That would be my feeling. If I need to make a motion at some point or something else, that would be great. I'd like to do that.
Can I have a clarification? Because the agenda was written by the committee. So,
by me, actually.
Okay.
I asked for input.
Okay. Well, with that said, do you want staff to also prepare an agenda for the committee as well?
Or how about if my recommendation might be that we prepare a draft agenda and send it to you, and then you can alter it as you like, so that the bulk of it is not you know, your burden, but that you could edit it, or.
Excellent.
If you prefer to prepare it, however we can help you be most efficient.
I'm indifferent about that because it doesn't take less time to prepare one page agenda.
Yeah. No, that's between you guys. I just assumed when I read the bylaws we adopted on last week and everything else that it means the chairman would consult with the staff, tell them what he wants on the agenda, they draft it up, he'd define it, edit it, and basically it's your work and they're staffing it for you. I'd assume that's how it would work. So.
However you'd like us to function to support your committee, and you can certainly give that some
and
thought.
Snacks.
And we can discuss okay.
I'll give it some thought.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Mike Massey. I think Chapter 5, just to speak to the kind of what the requirements are, I think it contemplates that we report at least one time a year in writing, but there's not a standing obligation to maintain minutes. As long as you have a record on which to base and keep open to the public the deliberations, I'm not sure you're burdened by having to prepare minutes. I wouldn't find the minutes to be particularly helpful to me, other than I might want to review the record, but I don't want to speak for everybody else. So I know you're not complaining about inconvenience, but it seems like Chapter 5 says if minutes are going to be kept, it's agency staff shall keep them, but it contemplates that they don't have to be kept as long as we report at least one time in writing to the commissioners. So just, you know, I don't really have a strong feeling either way, but you have some flexibility in how you'd like to support the committee, I guess, is what I'd say.
Does that include the bylaws we...
Well, that's something we could entertain. I think Tim's right about the bylaws would need to be addressed because they contemplate minutes. I just wanted to know, Chapter 5 may not constrain us. If we want to not have minutes, I think we can amend our bylaws to do that. But if staff's willing to support a basic minutes, you know, drafting exercise, I'm with Don. I think that would be helpful that staff do it, not us, so Bob doesn't get stuck with it. But maybe if you feel burdened by minutes, look at Chapter 5, see if you have some flexibility, and we could amend the bylaws and not require them. Just rely upon the record that's being taken. Not all committee, I mean, I don't know what the experience of the agency is, but I'm not sure every single one of these types of proceedings is always recorded. We have the benefit of recording this, so maybe it's not as big a deal.
All right, having said that, I've entertained a motion regarding this.
I would enter a motion that we request staff to keep minutes for us and work with the chairman on the agenda to relieve the committee of that burden.
Second the motion.
Any further discussion?
Only thing I suggest is maybe to say, if you're working with you, provide appropriate administrative support. I just kind of have a little broader, one broader item in there I would suggest. It'd be a friendly amendment, and if you didn't like it, then that's fine with me.
I have no objection to amending it to be general staff support.
You know.
All right, we'll vote on the amended motion then. And hopefully that's clear. We recite this to be clear for the record. Check with you.
I'm not even sure I remember exactly the wording I said the first time. I propose that the committee request staff to provide minutes and other clerical support for the committee and to work with the chairman on what that appropriate assistance would be.
All right. Any further discussion on that? All right, we'll call it to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Any additional comments before we jump into the meat of our meeting today? All right. As I explained to some of you, or actually all the committee in the email, I only listed these in high priority and lower priority because I thought there were some items that we definitely need to work on this month, and those are the higher priorities. That's not my attempt to push anything else aside, but it's my understanding that the commissioners wanted us to address the at the site issue as soon as possible, and also the Part A and Part B list that's required to be reviewed every 3 years. So that's my logic for putting it into these two categories. So with that in mind, we'll go ahead and get into the environmental benefit at the site. I will say, to my knowledge, I don't know if staff have had any...
I just wanted to give a little bit of general comments to the committee on some of the documents that we passed out to you guys.
Sure.
So to kind of, I guess, outline the review. The first document, general housekeeping, just so if those of y'all not familiar with this area, the next door down is a break room, if y'all so choose to get something from the break room. And then on the north wing, we have a cafeteria with coffee and snacks and stuff like that. But back to the committee. The documents that are in front of you, the first document, the biggest document, is actually the current rule that we have on the that is in place right now. you'll find up there that there are sections that are highlighted. Those are the current sections that staff have currently opened up for this rule proposal. Now, there's four other sections of this rule that are not highlighted. So the reason we're giving you this rule to make you aware that those sections are not open. So if there's some items or something that you would like to comment on or give advice to the commissioners on those sections, that will need to be opened up, because the opportunity when we go past proposal and adoption will not have an opportunity to comment on that section.
Are these the same as the rules that are on the website for September 2009?
Right, those are the current rules that are in place.
Okay, because I've been told there are two sets of rules on the website. One September 2009, and there's another way to get to it. Someone
Greg, that's correct. You've got the 08 application rules out there. If you go to your forms on the website, you can pull that whole section up and under the new website, you have 2009 rules. So there's two sets floating out there. And we ran into this because we kept wondering why things were changing. And we were missing some in NODs. So there's two sets out there. If you go to the new September ones,
that's guidance.
The applications themselves are out there.
Right, that's guidance. That's not the rule.
Yeah, it's the application document, I think, is what they're referring to, the application document.
Right, I'm talking about the rule. There's only one current rule that's right.
So it has the old rule attached to the application. Is that what you're saying?
That's the whole package.
And the rule is attached to the application guidance?
Yes.
And that's the old rule?
I haven't looked at it in detail, Mike Massey, for the record. I think the concern, based on what I reviewed earlier, is that the rule's probably the same. I didn't study the rule to see if it's the same. It wouldn't have a rule. No reason to be different. There are two different application forms.
Right, that's
currently
correct.
Available on the web.
That's correct.
And it had caused some confusion.
Okay.
I think that's right.
Okay. So we're talking about that packet right there that's just the rule. It's not talking about the application. And then the second document, it's the ECL list. That's extracted from that rule, and you'll find items that are highlighted in there. There's also some additional items that are highlighted at the end of each of the sections that staff have thought to look at as adding to these lists. We highlighted those because those are the ones that staff feel that there needs to be something addressed with that item. Later in your agenda, we can, at your liberty, you can call upon staff to ask what the problems you foresee in those type of items. The reason we did that, so if there's other items that you see that are not highlighted, that just to bring that to your attention,
okay.
Just to expedite y'all's review on the ECL. The other document is the major issues table. Y'all received that from the prior meeting. That's been developed a little bit at your request with a little bit more information. There's some supporting documentation that's also there about environmental benefit of the site and the CAT procedure. So once y'all get to that part in your agenda, you can call upon staff to deliberate or give you some comments if y'all so choose to. There's another document in there about the rule timeline. We went through a little bit of that at the last meeting. We wanted to give you the dates that this rule is scheduled for proposal. We have set a date, y'all agreed to a date on March 31st for those main issues, which was for the major issues table, the environmental benefit of the site issue, and then the cost analysis procedure. Those are the kind of items we would need to have before we start our management review, so we can have that thoroughly reviewed. Now, with giving you all the information, the stuff that we haven't highlighted, we can have a little bit more time for you guys to provide comments to us on other things that weren't brought to your attention that was in the rule by April 30th. So. With that said, I think that's all I have to say to you guys. If there's anything, like I said, while you go down your agenda that you want to call upon staff for a little bit of input, please do so.
Thank you.
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 Thank you please, we're here to help you.
Thanks, Chance.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to show my ignorance a bit, if you don't mind. I've got a question. What is a shiny green folder?
I told him to recopy that. That's the folder it goes in for manager review.
Okay.
I think we have a complete document on the four issues list, but it says one page is one of three, and you flip it over and it says page three of three. Is there a, this is it, right?
No, it should be a staple packet.
I got this.
Staple, but there's
one page staple.
Page two looks like maybe
page to itself. I have one page staple to itself.
Okay, well, I apologize for that. Will, did you get it?
Only the four-year term guys got it.
The rest are in the shiny green folder.
Okay, that's right. Who has the right packet?
I've got a four.
I don't understand because these are all together.
Okay.
You'll get a
four. All right. Thanks for that overview. I don't think we have a formal procedure for public comments, but as I said earlier, I think it is appropriate and acceptable for us to have some comments from the public within limit. And I've only had one request for public comments, and if you have any additional requests, I don't know, Tim, maybe that can come to you. I don't know the best way to do that. If others have requests to speak to public. The only request I've had is...
Chairman, yeah, if we want them to speak, let's have them speak now, so before we start.
Right. I was going to, as I said earlier, we're on the environmental benefits side issue now. So I would like whoever wants to speak on that issue, speak on that. And if there's nothing on the agenda, but you have a comment, you can save those general comments for the end. So now, to my knowledge, it's only one person, Parker Wilson, with Valero, wanted to speak a few minutes.
Well, I was actually hoping to listen to the discussion of the committee and then be able to have some comments. The one thing I would say is that on this particular side, if there's an opportunity to provide comments of the committee and potentially some language, we're just looking at some new documents that have been provided today, and I'd like that opportunity. I think I know time is of the essence, but there's another meeting on the 26th, correct? And then some recommendations, and so I feel like that. So would I be able to make some comments about once you're at the end of the discussion here?
Well, I think that's reasonable.
I'd be happy to wait till the end of the meeting and have public comment.
And I think the committee members would be happy if he wanted to give us something in writing on recommendations that they might have. I mean, that might be a useful way to do it too, just so we'd have something to react to. Sometimes hard to react to someone just speaking, and you know, if you don't have a piece of paper to look at least it is for me.
I agree.
So that would be helpful either at the end of the meeting or before the next meeting if they had specific recommendations.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, you might want to jump into this.
I just, maybe it'd be helpful to ask from you, do you envision that we're going to try to get to conclusion on this issue? I know this is a high priority issue. We've been asked by the commission to offer advice on this issue. And do you think we're getting there today? Or do you know? You have it included.
In my mind, this is a very significant, far-reaching issue. And I want to be careful not to be too strong in my opinion, because I do want to listen to the committee to see what your views are. But I can easily see that we don't decide it today. We have a lot of discussion, and we decide it the 26th at our next meeting.
That's reasonable. Either way, frankly, I don't have any preference on it. I have a document that I would like to distribute to the committee. I don't want to lay it out and talk about it now. I'll give them time to read it while discussion is going on this. Mm-hmm. And then I would like to then lay it out and discuss it later. But so it's not dropped on them right then, I'd like to have it distributed now. And then if multiple copies will be made for anyone in the audience, it's fine with me as well. It's your call.
That's fine.
But I want this document to be made available to the members, so they had to look at it, and later on, I'm going to propose it as advice for this committee.
Okay.
So how do we best do that? Do we ask our, is this administrative support that I was asking for?
Sure.
To distribute this?
And quickly.
Bob, I have some general comments, if that's appropriate now.
And by the way, I might say I just remembered that you're not going to be here at the 26th, right?
That's correct.
That was not my intent to exclude you from the process. I just know it's a big issue that we may not be able to decide today.
Well, and I would like to bring up, because I'm sure a lot of you have not thought of some of the implications. If you don't have at the site of some kind on in this documentation, it opens a real can of worms. And let me explain one example. Currently, if you have a natural gas compressor and you're in a non-attainment zone and you want to put in an electric drive for that compressor, you get a tax exemption based on the difference of cost in the electric and the gas, the way it's been done in the past, because you have no emissions, or you have less emissions at the site. If you remove at the site, then it's possible that somebody might say, hey, let's compare the emissions from the what you would have from the engine to what would be produced by the electric utility. Now, whether you use the average of all, which will include coal that has sulfur and mercury coming out, or whether you compare it to the next generation, which, or next incremental generation, which would be a gas turbine, it might well be possible that that compressor electric drive no longer qualifies. And I know of a number of other examples of things that might become a problem and an administrative nightmare for the TCEQ staff itself. So in general, I think we need something that designates at the site, just for administrative purposes and not having to do lots of esoteric calculations to prove one way or the other whether it's pollution control or not.
First, I think we need to remind ourselves that the at the site question is only in the flow diagram.
Right.
So, which came about in 2001 or thereabouts, something like that. I have concerns about the at the site, similar to what Don mentioned last time, I believe, about maybe the process, that it's within the process three counties over. At the site would exclude that type of environmental property, correct?
I don't understand the comment.
As I recall, maybe I can summarize what you said last time, Don, or maybe it's been it. But the chicken processing example that you used, if the incinerator was three counties over, I think, then if it's part of the process, you agreed that it should be eligible for exemption. Is that basically what I'm talking about?
If it's reducing emissions from the production process.
Well, reducing is only one.
Reducing, monitoring, controlling.
Yeah, right, okay. As well as we understand it. It's
controlling pollution from the production process.
Okay. All right. At the site seems to exclude that example.
Question, Bob.
It's not easy to get your arms around that, I realize.
I understand that. But if the incinerator is owned by the same people, I can see that, but if the incinerator is a provider of pollution control, then they don't qualify anyone.
That's right.
So that example fails. Now, if it's the same company owns the incinerator and the waste stream, I could see it qualifying.
Mike Nassie for the record, Wayne, I think the point is exactly yours, which is if it was separately owned, they wouldn't be able to.
Right.
Okay, so we don't need at the site. I mean, that example tells us that that the site's bad. So we have ways of preventing the off-site, you know, service provider. And
well, but answer how you, the question I have, what do you do in that case?
You mean the natural gas processor example?
Compressor,
not
yeah.
A compressor. I just think at the site.
You see my dilemma here.
Yeah, and I think it would be helpful perhaps to hear staff talk about what they see as the benefits of the at the site requirement in terms of administrative efficiency, because one of the things I'd like to make sure we as a committee do is make things as easy as they can be. But I'm like Bob, I sense that we have a blunt instrument here with this environment at the site, and we've identified a few reasons why it's not good. And Wayne's raised a question that kind of helps, or a comment that helps. I tend to believe the negatives associated with the at the site as the criteria outweigh the benefits. But I'm very much interested in going, like Bob, where Don and Bennett were last meeting, to something we can all agree on that gets at what we're trying to say, which is the heart of this statute.
If you want to include something about including a company's taking care of their own waste, any facility where they're taking care of their own waste, I don't have a problem with that, but I don't want this, because if you don't have something like that restricts, I tell you, this can go crazy.
I would say I think Wayne is saying something that I, in a way, concur with, and that at the site has had some value to the process. For me, it's been basically one I'm serving as a proxy. I had a conversation with some smarter folks than me who were involved in the discussions back in 2001 to try to get myself reminded about where at the site came from and the history of it. And I was reminded that at the time there was a staff proposal to require the applicant to figure out to quantify the emissions reductions. And that was not seen favorably by the advisory committee, having a basis in statute and being necessarily relevant. And so the compromise that was reached was, did the property reduce emissions at the site? And this was basically a kind of give and take compromise at the advisory committee at the time. And that it came from observing investment that increased emissions and was applying for positive use determinations. And the justification was, well, we're making more widgets and we're polluting less per widget, so we think we get a positive use determination. And that gave everyone involved some misgivings. So there was an attempt to deal with that, and that's what this came from. From our view in looking at it, I agree that it is a blunt instrument that may not be cutting correctly on either way. You know, either side. Sometimes we might be denying stuff that justifies, that should have an exemption, and other times we might be granting when we
just because you are reducing emissions at the site, but if you're increasing emissions at another site, this doesn't deal with that at all. And I remember an instance where we found applications for replacing a pump with a non-emitting pump, a pump that had to be had for the production of good or service. So we replace a gas-fired pump with an electric pump. We're going to shift the emissions from on-site, where we burn the gas, to a gas-fired electric plant somewhere else in the state. Should that be a pollution control device? You know, we think it's something being used to produce a good or service. So, and at the site, you know, hits that wrong, in my opinion. So, I think we need to find a better solution to that question.
I'm not sure that at the site doesn't work for your example, because if your incinerator is not a commercial disposal facility, then it would qualify based on reducing pollution at that site.
Tax exemption would be granted at that county, and that local taxes in that county where the equipment was actually located.
Yeah.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the TCQ staff has generally considered at the site as within the fence line.
Well, that's in the fence line of that facility. The incinerator is the site.
So it's a different site.
Yeah, it's a different site, but it's that site. If it's not a commercial disposal facility, then it would get an exemption. There's no reason that at the site would exclude that.
That's an interpretation.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lee has distributed a proposed resolution. Is it appropriate for us to take that up as a form of a motion so we can discuss the proposed adoption of this resolution?
Can I respond real quickly before we do that? I want to comment on something you said, Don, about it. I don't know if it hinted at a net reduction in pollution, if that's what you were looking at, but it seems that if we went down that road, you would never grant a positive use determination for any greenfield site, because definition, a greenfield new plant of any kind.
Well, you wouldn't grant 100%, but you might have you'd have property that falls into two categories on a greenfield. Property that's used to produce the good or service at the greenfield, and property used to control emissions from that process.
Okay.
The property used to control emissions from that process should fall into this exemption.
All right, just want to clarify.
Yeah, and it's not, and the whole reason we got away from the quantifiable language is just it's so complex to try to figure, because of exactly your issue. You may have good pollution control equipment at a new site, but the emissions overall are going up, but that doesn't really matter. What matters is it pollution control equipment to meet or exceed an environmental regulation, and the exact. So we chose to use at the site to make sure you're referring, you know, something's happening there that's leading to the control of that pollution. And it's not part of a product that might have environmental benefits, but it's not, that's not your rationale for the pollution control program.
Mike Matthews has suggested that we have a motion to go through the parliament procedure. As I understand it, you need a motion and a second to have formal discussion on it. Keep in mind, we can have a substitute motion to table it if we need to for later discussion. So do we have a motion?
I move to adopt the resolutions that Don Lee has proposed.
Do I hear a second?
You're proposing to adopt it, or we're proposing to discuss it?
I'm proposing to adopt it with the idea that then puts it in front of us for formal discussion.
Okay.
If we want to, the committee.
We might want to word
it. Might want to pull it down.
Right.
I'm assuming it would. I think at some point I need to probably ought to introduce it.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's part in discussion, so.
Good. Do we have a second? Second for discussion.
Second for discussion.
All right. Now let's continue discussion.
Mr. Chairman, not having any history with this, this committee having any history of how it wants to format and speak, I just used something, I created a resolution format. And so I don't even know if this is how this committee wants to do it, but I had to do something in order to put this out there. So I offered as that, and I'm not, there's no huge pride of authorship on wordsmithing and on format and stuff like that. This just seemed logical to me, but it may not be logical to the committee, and I understand that. What we did want to put in front of the committee was this concept of trying to find a better test to go into the rules for what Mike and I have been talking about and what Bennett and I have been talking about, which is what we think is at the very heart of the pollution control exemption. I go back to the early 90s when Texas Taxpayer and Research Association was proposing this program. And the testimony of that entity and of supporters of this, that the purpose of this program was to, frankly, and take no offense to my appraisal district friends, this is their words, the purpose of this program was to tell the chief appraisers to do what they should be doing already, to not tax what we shouldn't be taxing now. We should be taxing the property used to make widgets and provide services, but we shouldn't be taxing the scrubbers, the filters, the stuff that government comes in and says you have to buy and own in order to make widgets and provide services. And that's a concept that local governments embraced and agreed with and has been the heart. Now, as we went forward, we had confusion about whether that was being done. The legislature came back and put in provisions in the statute that directs the agency that when you get these partial terminations, you have to divide the property between what produces goods and services and what doesn't. The Attorney General, in opining on this in 1996, in a letter opinion, said it was clear from the legislative history that this provision demonstrates that it was not intended to give tax relief to those who are primarily engaged in the commercial business of pollution control or abatement. We interpret this meaning for property that is for this, but rather was intended to give such relief to businesses compelled by law to install or acquire pollution control equipment which generates no revenue for such businesses. The Attorney General says generates no revenue for such businesses. In other words, again, this division between productive property used for production of goods and provision of services and property used to mitigate, monitor, all that stuff, control pollution in that process. So I'm suggesting that we advise the Commission that they should amend their rules to replace the at-the-site requirement with a requirement that the environmental regulation that the property under consideration is being used to meet or exceed regulates pollution from the production of a good or service and does not regulate the characteristics of the good or service produced or provided. That we draw a line between, we know that products and even the provision of services throughout our economy has environmental regulations that apply to those products, the characteristics of those products. And putting those characteristics in the product is not what is meant by this program. And from a local government perspective, we don't see an end to that line. You start going down that line of saying that the characteristics of the product, changing the characteristics of the product, then gets you this exemption, we don't see an end to that. We see no clear line for what is exempt and what is not exempt. And we see, you know, the equipment used to take all the lead out of paint because we've figured out that lead paint's bad for us. And you look at all the different products that we figured out, there are ways to do it safe in a clean way. The product can be clean or the product can be not clean. And we figured out a lot of ways there. There's a lot that goes on in the economy that's part of the production of goods or services, and we're making money off of selling that product into a marketplace. So that's our proposal for consideration. there might be better ways to word it, and we're open, you know, because there's no pride of authorship on that. We wanted to come out and try to get this concept on the table. We think it would be valuable for the agency and for the commission to amend their rules in that way. But we do think that at the site needs something to replace it if it's going away.
Will you expand on the last phrase, does not regulate the characteristics of the good or service produced or product?
Well, I think that's what I was trying to do. I'm trying to think of what else I would say. We are trying to capture the concept that investment property that is used to produce a good of a particular characteristic that may be required by federal regulation, state regulation, or whatever, is not property that gets a positive use determination. That's productive property. It's producing a good or service sold on the market.
That seems to conflict with your meet or exceed, which meet or exceed is in 1131. You seem to be talking to the meet part of it, but not the exceed.
Well, it's meet or exceed a regulation regarding the characteristics of the good or service produced or provided. If your investment is trying to meet or exceed a regulation related to the characteristics of your product, then we think it does not fit, whether you're meeting, exceeding, or whatever. If you're trying to meet or exceed a regulation of your productive process, the emissions from your productive process, and that necessarily means that there is productive property. If you're producing a good or service with the equipment, then you can't have a 100% exemption, right? I mean, it's by definition.
Then maybe you ought to add a meet or exceed and put in there your productive process in the sentence there somewhere to define that that's what you're meaning and exceeding is the pollutions provided by the productive process.
So you're meeting exceed the environmental regulation. In the right document?
Well, right.
If there was going to be a clarification, that's what we're at. You're meeting the bottom line. When you say meter exceed, you're just trying to shorten it. If you could add meter exceed the environmental regulation.
Right. I mean, I thought we were already referring back to environmental regulation in the previous phrase.
And I can read it that way.
Yeah,
I see what you're trying to shorten. Yeah.
Any other discussion?
Do you see that this would conflict, Don, with Part B that the legislature added, where it's if you look at Part B,
is that 1131K?
Yeah.
The list.
The list.
No, I mean the Attorney General opined after the passage of that legislation in 2007 that there was nothing in 17K that says this prevails over the other provisions, notwithstanding
right,
the other provisions of the statute. So you have to read the entire statute together.
Right.
The entire statute together still directs TCEQ to divide property between productive property and non-productive property. Mm-hmm. None of the concepts of Prop 2 were overridden
by this.
For anything in that list. Mm-hmm. And the AG, I think, if you read their opinion,
yeah,
indicates that. And then the legislature came back last session and said very clearly, nothing in K exempts it from all the other requirements and provisions of 1131. So we believe that legally what we are saying is the requirement to TCEQ. We believe at the county level that TCEQ has no authority to grant exemptions beyond this. Mm-hmm. And these rules must accomplish this.
And then how would this get translated into these flow charts and you ever
that's
get
kind of that administrative support thing.
Right.
So, this is their rule.
Don't leave it to
them.
It's the first statement that this would restrict Tier 2 and 3 applications, but not 1 and 4? Is that?
I don't think, no, that statement does not
I would
to me.
I would
think this applies to all applications.
Well, I mean, in practice, in effort.
In practice, if this applied, you wouldn't be in Tier 1. Tier 1 is automatic 100% exemption, is that right? So this is really, the at the site is in the Tier 3 process, is that right, evaluation process?
Guess it could be Tier 2 or Tier 3.
Tier 2 or Tier 3.
Well, it applies to all of them, and that's the first box on the flow chart. You don't get to any tier level unless there's a benefit to site.
Right. So this would apply to all analysis of applications.
So instead of saying, is there environmental benefit at the site, you'd say, is the environmental benefit related to, I'm just not sure how you said they'll figure it out.
Yeah, I really want to express the concept that we take the requirement that there be an environmental benefit at the site, we take it to analysis of whether the environmental benefit is related to the production process or to the product being produced.
So in the flow chart, it's correct or change the language in box one, expand on box one, whatever.
I frankly did not analyze the flow chart, so I would direct that question to these guys.
And then knock out box five, because we were covered in box one.
I think there's still a requirement in statute that there be an environmental benefit.
Well, he would be citing it in Cochrane. Mr. Chairman, as a drafting suggestion, I think Don's right. I think staff could maybe advise us what they think would be most expedient in terms of the flow chart. I would think that to make sure we prevent any confusion in the future, that the sections, in maybe the definition section 17.2, subsection 5, which talks about the decision flow chart, just have a clarification sentence that uses this language, this operative language about regulates pollution from the production of a good or service and does not regulate the characteristics of the good or service. Mm-hmm. That's the heart and soul of what I understand Don's proposal to be. I think you could have whatever words that staff thought would be helpful in the flow chart, but as long as in the rule that cites the flow chart, you say that short version box statement means this. Because you're not going to be able to shove all the words you need in the box. Maybe you want to have a big box. But
so if I could say it another way, the flow chart will be just for reference purposes. But the actual 17.2 will take precedence over that.
Right now, the flow chart is referenced in 17.2, isn't that correct? Staff, it's a component, it's a figure in the Texas Administrative Code.
Figure 17.14 or 17.15.
Right. So it has regulatory effect because of that. And so when they use something in those boxes, it's very important. And the way you soften the need to shorten it is you say, when we use that phrase in 17.2 sub 5, you say, when we use that phrase in the decision flowchart, this is what it means. And that, I think, would prevent any confusion, as long as we could come up with what the two or three sentences of agreement are about what Don's offered language is.
So to get to what you're saying, back to my, we need a footnote in the flow chart that says refer to the definitions for
starting. That's for clarification. I mean, right now, again, the figure is in the red, right? I'm not mistaken. So it's the regulation. And so all we need to do is in the discussion of the decision flow chart in 17.2, which there's language right there now in the rule, you just add, similar to what we were talking about, language that would clarify that.
Don, can you tell me how this solves the example I brought up?
You'll have to remind me of the example.
Compressor engines.
Natural gas compressor, and we've substituted an electric motor for a gas engine.
Mm-hmm. explain, was there a reason for the substitute? Was there a new criteria?
Well, it's in a non-attainment zone, so they had to, they couldn't build it.
They're wanting to lower emissions at their, in their site, so they're replacing their gas-fired pumps with electric pumps.
Or non-compressor, yeah.
What I'm saying has been a requirement per se that's...
Yeah, if it's in a non-attainment zone, they can't put in a big gas engine, so they had to put in electric drive.
To meet the criteria.
To meet the criteria. Now, it's debatable whether overall that reduces pollution or not. I mean, it, somebody'd have to go through the calculations, but I think it's beneficial at that site, since it's a non-attainment zone, to reduce the pollution. But if you don't have, I don't know how this allows for that.
It's not, well, that's really doesn't do anything.
Why would it not
still get the exemption?
Controls.
You have to, if you don't have an anthracite requirement, you would have to compare either the total emissions of all the power plants in the state, which includes coal, and I know you got nuclear in wind, but you've also got sulfur and stuff from coal plants, or you have to compare to the incremental electric component, which is a gas turbine. And comparing a gas turbine along with the inefficiencies caused by the electric delivery system, you may well have less...
I don't think you'd have to do all that. Don't you really just have to...
Right here, under what Don wrote, I mean, it basically states that if you require requirement for environmental regulations, you had to do it because you wanted to meet that attainment.
Okay, well, that's what I was asking.
Let me try to answer, because this is actually something I've had a lot of... This exact example is something that we've had a discussion with staff about over the years, because we did find examples of applications for exactly that. A business was wanting to reduce their total emissions, and therefore they were replacing gas-fired pumps with electric pumps. And we were concerned those were getting 100% or could get a 100% exemption. And we're like, they have to have this to move the product. There's clearly some productive value here. And if I remember correctly, and y'all stop me if I'm wrong, the result of this was, no, we go through the cost analysis calculations. And there is a tax exemption for the delta of the extra value that the electric pump has over the gas-fired pump.
My question has been answered.
Yeah. That was going to be...
I don't think we changed that.
I just wanted to make sure that example...
You're just comparing one type of equipment versus the other.
Basically. Yeah, that's right.
Do you need to put an extra pollution control on your old gas compressor unit or versus the electric? You know, it's just a gas compressor.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, that came up back in 2001 on the tugs at Air Force.
That was an issue, yes.
Yes. And basically, that's what you did. It was the delta between an electric versus a conventional.
A gas or diesel powered.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, I think the compressor engine was appealed, and that actually came out of an appeal before the commissioners. The incremental cost difference, that's where the language came from.
Right.
Was the appeal with the commissioners and determining that that was the proper way to get it out of the track.
I'm satisfied.
Okay.
Do you promise never to bring it up again?
Can staff ask a question during this discussion on the benefit design?
Sure.
Okay. I understand where you're going with this, but we're still, we use the anthracite as a qualifier initially at all pollution control properties, and I'm not sure that this language allows us to do that with every type of...
I didn't hear the first part. Could you...
We use the anthracite as, that's our first qualifier. I think really the rule is the first qualifier, anthracite, that benefits the second qualifier in the application. And what do we use instead? I'm not sure that this resolution, this language, gets at every type of application that we see or type of property.
Yeah, give us some examples so I can thoroughly understand.
Well, I can't think of anything.
I think what runs, Tim Reed, I think what Ron's trying to get at is that the anthracite requirement has been used as the gatekeeper for eligibility of pollution control equipment. And what this seems to do is, instead of serving that gatekeeper function, says
Well, here, it's either going to be regulating pollution from a production process or related to characteristics of a good or service. So it doesn't have to meet that initial hurdle. It seems to shift everything over to the CAP procedure to argue about what percentage of the equipment is production and what percentage is pollution control. That seems to be...
It seemed to me that the potential replacement gate, for which I'm not going to suggest to you, you should decide is sufficient, but I would be, is the environmental regulation related to the emissions of that business process, or is the environmental regulations that are being met or exceed related to the product? Now,
he's eliminating the products being...
That's the gatekeeper this would suggest, but that may not accomplish all the gatekeeping that you feel is necessary, in which case I would want to hear about, okay, let's try to identify that problem and let's find the necessary solution to it.
I still want to hear an example of something that at the site doesn't take care of.
Well, let's say you have you cause pollution, but then you sequester it somehow. You shift it over three counties and then release the pollution. I can't imagine what that is. I don't know enough about it. I don't have a problem as a local government giving an exemption there. So that's an example of where at the site is unnecessarily restricted. Way. If it's actually reducing pollution, just not in that county, that's hard to argue from our perspective. But on the other hand, as Don says, I feel strongly that this is really a compromise. This is going to work for both industry and local government, because there's going to be some cases where there's going to be exemptions granted that aren't currently being granted. But it is going to cut off a few exemptions. It's going to cut off the argument that an end product can be a pollution control result, which is totally contrary, we think, to the purpose of Prop 2 funds. So it is eliminating one gatekeeping function, but I don't really know what that function is there for.
I'm sorry, but you're saying if I put a pipeline in at a plant to move pollution to the next county, you want an exemption for that?
I'm saying if somehow the overall, if somehow the pollution, the emission is reduced, but it's just not at the same county where the manufacturing plant is, it could still be eligible for an exemption.
But is there a separate site for controlling the pollution? Like a separate incinerator? See, that incinerator would get the tax exemption.
And you could envision, Wayne, a situation where that would be several hundred tracts of land if you were sequestering something too large.
Right.
So where I come down on, Wayne, is we don't have anything in the statute that uses the phrase at the site. And what Don has drafted has a lot more of a nexus to the statute. And I think it puts the commission in a sacred place. We've seen that there are problems with the at the site. It may be that we need to come up with a different gatekeeper to help the staff. I'd love to dialogue with that, but I mean, I think we have a good proposal. I think I'd like to, before we move toward any further discussion, talk about whether we should do it in this format. But this operative language at the bottom, I think, is tied to the statute.
Well, I don't want to put the appraisers in a position where they can't administer this independently. So if we want to postpone the adoption of this or the final wording until the next meeting, I don't have a problem with that. If y'all can give me an example, I just don't understand your examples enough, but if you may be talking about something that needs to be addressed through a different wording.
I haven't heard a specific example yet from your argument that at the site doesn't cover. And I've heard they may be sequestering, but the place you're reducing the emission is the plant that's producing the pollution, so that's one side. I mean, it's going underground and spreading out, but it's from a specific process.
What if you're moving it and injecting on a separate track versus venting it. I mean, I think, I'm not putting words in Ben's mouth, but you could vent that, whatever you capture. Let's go ahead and call it carbon dioxide.
As an example.
Okay, just for example. You could vent it, and in fact, it is venting right now, when it's, even when it's captured, even when it's captured and piped offside and venting. So the act of not venting it and injecting it in or 100 play, I mean, where these injections are going to work rain is not
important. Your injections, you're preventing pollution at the site of the source. So I don't see why it doesn't qualify.
Well, okay, but what I think the injection well 200 miles downstream could be the site that's going to that they've applied for the exemption on. And under this deal, if it's the same company, it would qualify, wouldn't it?
Or outside. You're injecting in a remote location where the pollution is being created.
You've got.
So where's that property inventory to tax? At the remote location or at the home site?
I would rather expand at the site to include.
I agree with Bennett and Mike that the at the site appears one place and it's on that decision chart. That's it. And I think legally we've got better footing here than we did on the site. I like on the site. It's cleaner. It's cleaner as far as easier to define and move forward.
How about we have at the site for the staff, but they'll
subject to the rule.
Subject to explanation by the applicant why, and then include this language. That way they have it as a general gatekeeper, but you can get around it.
I see benefit in taking away at the site. It's a point of contention that I think we can work around with other language.
It has no legs. It can't stand on something.
I would like to give an opportunity, since I did say we have public comments for each topic. Anyone from the public wants to comment?
Parker Wilson, for the record, still on the park. I think what's happening here is
just to make sure we get it on the board.
What I worry about is that there's a lot of confusion. It's kind of
I think there may be a lot of confusion going on with this language between the production prohibition that is clearly in the law and the discussion about what at the site means. It is a gatekeeper. It's probably, if properly interpreted, a good gatekeeper. And I would suggest that it ought to stay in the rule. You just need some clarity. There's been some unusual interpretations over the years. I think that there's a real potential for unintended consequences if you start messing with at the site and start talking about production and the language about regulating characteristics of a good or service. What exactly does that mean? I think that's really opening up a hornet's nest of confusion. I think we need something that is simple. What I might suggest is that there is something that's already in the record that might help shed some light on the intent. And what I've heard a lot is we need to understand what the intent of this is. Right? There was some discussion earlier about Trent Quinn Farms, and that was sort of the intent. That's where this came out of. If you look in the agency document, on Prop 2, it's dated August 31st, 2006, Appendix A, and it goes through and it summarizes a lot of the previous determinations and explains what happened. And I'd just like to read this. And again, I'd like an opportunity to do some formal comments in writing in response to a lot of discussion today. But on Trent Wind Farm, it said the application requested a partial determination for a wind farm. Staff issued a negative determination based on there being no pollution control occurring at the site of the wind farm. Again, the concern was that you've got a wind farm over here and a speculative benefit over here. You've got two different taxing authorities and two different populations. I think that caused some confusion and some heartburn. So what they said was, okay, well, during a 1999 work group meeting, a decision was made that in order for an application to be eligible for a positive determination, there had to be an actual pollution control occurring at the plant site.
wasn't environmental benefit, it was pollution control, which is what this whole statute is about, pollution control property. Went on to say, commission agreed with staff, and this policy was adopted by rule in January 2002. That actually seems like something that may be workable, may act as a gatekeeper, may provide a lot of clarity, and it doesn't get away from any of the concerns that have just been addressed about the production aspect of it. That is clearly in the law. If you've got a production equipment, that is production equipment, it is qualified. If it has some production property, some pollution control property, you do that cap analysis and preserves that. So nothing gets away from being able to say, look, you're going to have to demonstrate that it's pollution control and not production equipment. So it seems to me, by the staff's own documentation here, referencing back to 1999 and 2002 from Trenton Farms and reiterated in 2006, that may be the way of sort of looking at this. There has to be pollution control property, there has to be pollution control going on, and where that goes on, where that is occurring, has to be at the plant site. And I think this solves everything. It also has the benefit of harmonizing everything that we've been looking at. I'm sorry, it harmonizes everything we've been looking at. You look at the ECA, you look at a lot of these applications that people are trying to figure out, well, is that within the fence line? Well, is this production? Whatever. It harmonizes everything. And so I would strongly recommend that there might be some discussion along those lines.
This is Don. Apply your analysis to hydrotreaters.
Okay.
Because that's what we're talking about. We all know what we're talking about here. That's what we're talking about.
Well, okay.
Sure.
That actually is a very good example. EPA says, hey, you've got to pull sulfur out of gasoline and diesel. It's the offending molecule. And in order to do that, you have to install hydrotreaters. So we go out, we spend a whole lot of money. We install hydrotreaters. It grabs the sulfur. That's the offending molecule that EPA is concerned about to prevent pollution. We do that. Where is that happening? Is it happening over at a third party? Is it happening at a different county? No. It's happening right there. It's happening at the plant site. You invest it. You operate the equipment, you maintain the equipment, you don't ever get any of that money back. But that is definitely pollution control property. If it's not pollution control property, I want to know why EPA is requiring us to install that.
Could you make high sulfur fuel and sell it overseas? Could you make high sulfur fuel in Texas and sell it overseas?
Sure.
Where there is no requirement to take that.
You could do that, but anybody doing that would quickly go out of business.
But you could do that, right?
There's all sorts of things you could do.
So the EPA doesn't require you to take sulfur out of fuel that you make here in Texas.
Understand, but we were doing, we are in the business of making gasoline and diesel domestically, primarily domestically. We're ticking along fine, everything is great. There's no market advantage to this. There's a lot of discussion about, well, this is a market spec. It's not a market spec. If we went out on our own and said, we're going to make super, super low gasoline and diesel, and everybody's going to pull up to the pump and say, I want to pay 25 cents a gallon more for that, or a dollar more a gallon. The same way you go to the grocery store and buy organic, because you say, I think that's a better product. You can make that market argument. We were ticking along, making gasoline and diesel work perfectly well. No problems with that. EPA said, you know what, we've got a lot of environmental concerns, a lot of problems here we need to address. We want to get the sulfur even lower than it was. So go out and get, and even in their own documents, EPA says, environmental benefit in the area, this is good stuff. But it is definitely pollution control property. Go back to what Prop 2 is about. Prop 2 said, if there's environmental regulation by an environmental agency that requires installation of something, you don't pay taxes on it. That's it. It's fairly simple.
But in producing cleaner fuel, you produce more sulfur-type pollution at that site. Personally, I would think anything you use to handle that pollution you produce there would rate some kind of exemption.
But I think there already is. I think the sulfur recovery units get a partial, and it's a good example of how you can sort of split this between, you know, whether it's drug or purely pollution control. And you look at a sulfur recovery unit, and you say, hey, once you capture the sulfur, now what do you do with it? Now you go to the next step. Well, the next step is to grab it with a sulfur recovery unit, and you get elemental sulfur. Good Lord, what do you do with that? Well, you go landfill it. But the market's right, which is not right now, but sometimes the market's right, and you can get money for that sulfur. So you back that out.
The only reason for the self-recovery unit is because of pollution control. You just have to go up straight. That is not the only thing having to do with sulfur. Hydro triggers, tier two hydro triggers, the one mandated by EPA, is pollution control property. It's the, we go out of business if we don't install that. But we did not spend the money we spent. Nobody spent the money they spent just because they thought it was, gee, a good idea. They have to do it.
Commissioner Becker, may I respond to that, please?
My name is Bernardo Garcia. I'm with the Harris County Appraisal District, and we're intimately acquainted with Valero's hydrotreaters. And our concern with removing the at-the-site requirement is that it creates a sort of what I call a freakonomic effect, unintended consequences. The word that hasn't been used here is one that Harris County would then be subsidizing other counties.
Yes.
Harris County would be losing millions in tax revenue, not for its benefit, because by definition the hydrotreaters create additional pollution, and in fact this has to be dealt with there. But the product that they're making, which they're able to sell elsewhere, Harris County is subsidizing that. And what will happen is along the Gulf Coast, all the other refineries, once Valero gets theirs, they've already told us, you know, we're not applying for it, but once Valero gets it, guess what? We're coming right in. In Harris County alone, if every refinery were to get an exemption for hydrotreaters like what Valero is asking for, there would be a reduction in excess of $1 billion in taxable value. That's in excess of $22 to $25 million in actual tax revenue. Keeping at the site keeps that Pandora's box, that can of worms, from spilling out. The nasty word of subsidy. You're asking, when you remove that type of requirement from the flow chart, you're then asking other counties to subsidize, not only other counties in Texas, you're asking Texas to subsidize other states as well. The problem I have with what Valero is doing is that they have basically a business model where they buy cheap foreign crude, which is, has a high sulfur content. They bring it in to Harris County. It sits in foreign trade zones, which therefore makes it tax exempt, and they've had that for many years. And then they take this dirty crude, instead of buying cleaner crude that doesn't require that additional refining process, and they send it to their hydrotreater facility to make it cleaner, and now they want that exempt as well. That's fundamentally what we're concerned about, that what you're doing is you're subsidizing a processing process. That's our concern.
I just want to be clear that the proposal that I've made is intended to make it clear and give advice to the commission that you cannot grant the exemption for hydrotreaters. We believe not only is it a bad policy, that it's not authorized.